Right, people might have heard in the past you have been quite open in referencing, because it was early in your own career, some of the difficulties of like partnering with someone who's established already and someone who already is like the big voice in the cast, you know, and trying to find your own space and get balance and stuff. With Henry, were there challenges?
Yeah, so to a point, like working with Toby, we were both kind of play by play. He originally wanted to work with Fifflaren, who had just gone into Twitch, into his role there, and couldn't afford to take 2 months to go there. And I was thrown to him last minute. We worked really well up to the finals, where Toby wanted to like take a lot of the mic space, and I basically had to say to him like, "Listen, I know I'm not your color commentary, but you need to make this work for both of us." Henry, it was a similar problem, but the opposite direction. He was so analytical, but not yet found his rhythm in casting, that he would talk for like 2 minutes. And I'd be like, "Whoa, dude, like, you're giving me like no space here." And at the time, I was really new. So I basically said to him after like night one or two, I looked at him, I said, "That's enough. Like, 45 seconds, you talk, I talk, done, move on. Like, no more. That's it." And I was pretty hard on him, only because I knew that me not being hard on Toby Wan led to more problems down the line. Like, we just kind of developed this really bad chemistry. Not that we weren't getting along, but just like we weren't working, and we weren't working on it. And part of that was me willing to like say to Toby, like, "Yeah, you're the man here. Like, I'm the new guy."
What would you say are the challenges of staying in a duo, though? Like, is
Yeah.
there a limit to how far you can take it? Does it get stale at some point in time? I mean, it feels like we've started to see over the last few years, because of how long esports has been going, there are negatives as well that come with it. You know, and you see some of the duos have broken up, or some of them seem get played out, or you get the problem where people start to not like one of the guys, and therefore the other guy gets dissed. You know, what would you say are the challenges, and how do you think about them?
Yeah, I definitely kind of agree with you on this. So like, I remember making a video saying I needed a duo at the start, because you want that chemistry. But to go on the other side, Anders has talked about this. He's thought about a format where, why not in the group stages go back to what we used to do at the very start, just mix it up until the playoffs, because then that's when it matters. Then you want to get serious. Then you've got the
Sure.
audience. But like, you're right, you can go stale. I've noticed times when Henry and I are just, we've had enough of each other. Like, we're just sick of it. And I'll say a joke that normally he'd laugh at, and he'll just be like, "Yeah, cool, I can keep going." And then that's when it's like, oh shit. Like, if we're gonna not laugh at each other, just no one's gonna laugh at them. It's just gonna be bad for everyone. So yeah, I think that there are times. Oh, and I'll go beyond that. I'll say, like, when I casted with Sponge in Shanghai, he brought in like his Australian humor, and I thought it was great. And like, I was using jokes that I would not use with Henry anymore, because he'd heard them a million times before. Not like it's the same joke, but the same like vein of humor, right?
Okay.
And then Chad would be like, "Haha." And then everything felt like, you know, fun again. And I think there are times, yeah, definitely, when you could benefit from rotating around and mixing it up. And I think the chemistry will always be better when you're in a duo, but you can certainly have more charisma sometimes with someone new.
So what do you think was different from playing all those solo queue games where you're doing fantastically back in Europe? What's different in competitive when you play with a jungler?
Well, the thing is, in solo queue, back then the meta was completely different. Like, mid lane snowballed a lot hotter, so you could just take over the game by yourself. But in competitive, people will play more safe, and they won't just get solo killed over and over. And you actually need to do stuff together with your jungle to get vision and all that kind of thing. But the problem I had with Meteos was the way he played was he would play very, very efficient, like mainly just focus on being ahead of the enemy jungler, which is, in my opinion, the wrong way to approach the game, because I think the most important thing is that you control the map together. Like, you get vision, you invade, you pressure. That's how I thought the game should be played. But even though he did invade from time to time, you know, if you look at other junglers, they will just go to enemy camps if it's a good timing. But like, he would always make sure that his jungle would be cleared, you know, just try to be as efficient as possible before doing that. Like, he wouldn't want to take risks. Like, if we invaded and there wouldn't be anything, or it would go wrong, then we just wouldn't go for it. So we played a very slow game. Like, as a mid laner, you can't really play aggressive unless you have vision of like enemy jungler, because otherwise you put yourself at risk. So in that sense, I had to adapt and just play really safe, because if we never really get like proper vision, then as a mid laner, you can't really do anything, and that's kind of the same way it works right now. So it was just really hard for me to do anything when I played with Meteos the very first time.
Yeah, well, this is the big shock, is that when you got to the playoffs, for anyone who doesn't remember, this was actually back when TSM had like their worst split ever. And then you were the top seed facing them. And everyone I know said, right, Cloud9's going to win this one. You know, TSM's going out. Cloud9's probably going to win the whole season. And yet, bizarrely, they actually beat you reasonably handedly. What happened going into that series? I mean, in this regular split, you were doing really well.
Yeah. I think there's multiple factors. I think TSM improved a lot. Like, props to them. They were a garbage team. Then they became really good. And leading up to playoffs, like, I think Rush kind of got tired of living in NA. So he, like, you know, he dropped everything he was doing. Like, he wasn't playing solo queue. He just wasn't practicing. He was just, I don't know if he was, like, depressed, but he was just sleeping most of the time. And then because he wasn't really playing solo queue, like, if you looked at his match, at his league account at the time, you know, he was 49% win ratio, stuck in Diamond 2. And if you think the season before that, you know, he was ranked 1 in NA solo queue and the very best. Like, that's not to take anything away from the way he played. But I think because he didn't really play the game very much, we didn't really understand the meta that much. So we ended up playing Kindred every game. Cause he got some advice from Meteos that Kindred was really good. And, you know, we played the same jungler over and over, didn't really adapt, and it didn't turn out that good. And that's not, I'm not trying to say like Rush lost us the game or anything, or the series or anything. Cause I think, like I said, TSM played really well. And yeah, I don't think me and Rush like clicked together as well as we probably could have. But it was really hard because to me, it felt like he didn't really want to play that much.
When I, as a like player and a person, look at him, it was like, Glaive, we used to respect you so much for your calling skills. You know, we used to think that you were the best caller in the world. And I still think you could be. And I even said that to him, like when I asked, why is he not calling Coming Worlds? And he was just like, I don't remember in particular what he said word by word, but it was more like, Snabby is doing a great job and I'm not sure that I am at my best when I like fully control and fully call. Cause he felt he has some individual skills to show off as well when he was like the second guy calling or not as like, as locked down by calling. And I always like told him and I always thought to myself that like, if only you knew how much you do for a team when you're not calling, it doesn't matter. Like, it literally doesn't matter if he only puts up 5 frags a game because he's that good at calling and he makes your team believe that much in what you're doing, you know, whereas a player like MSL has to put up still like a decent amount of number. He can't go like zero in every single game, you know, and still be valued as high as he is now. Like he's still a little bit further away from the Glaive I at least think of that would out have played with MSL for a while. But Glaive was that good, you know, it gets the sense that he was that good. And I simply think that he just like was confused and he thought he was more valuable not being the caller, which he now found out for sure that he's not. Like he's calling in Astralis, he's calling the best team in the world in 2017 where the game is blowing up. You know, you literally can't ask for a better comeback, I guess it is, after a year out where he literally didn't play any serious Counter-Strike.
Okay, so when you talk now about this era just after that, so that might have been like the career, you know, you were in fantastic form, everything was working well, you had your style, you had your team. If someone then hears that you decided once Nico was kicked, the primary AWPer wasn't doing a very good job, right, I'm going to be the primary AWPer now and I'm going to do it quite often. If someone hears that, well, you talk now, you're saying all the right things. Nah, you know, now I look back, I shouldn't have done it, all the rest of it, you know. This is one of the few times, right, where I will just say, I did tell you so. Like, I told you and MSL, like, what is this plan? This plan makes no sense. You're taking one of the best players on your team who has a style that works, and you're saying, it's like saying, oh, someone has, like, a really bad illness in his leg, so let's just, like, chop off his working arm and put it as his leg. It's like, that makes no sense at all. And so, even though you take a lot of the blame for it now and say, you know, it was my idea, here's the thing, there's two aspects going on here. One, even at the beginning of this interview, you tried to slip it in under there. Like, I was a pretty good AWPer at the beginning of the Nexus or whatever. Exactly. So I know even now in the back of your mind, you still secretly believe you're some good AWPer.
We went into that tournament expecting we were going to qualify and make it through. I spent a lot of time before that tournament trying to find a sponsor. because I think Quantic just disbanded before that first qualifier, and that's why we went as Cloud9 at the time in the first qualifier. I believe that's what happened.
I think it was when something happened, like if everyone can remember, I think the owner of Quantic just disappeared or something, right?
And so the funds disappeared and it just crashed. Like, we were supposed to go into their gaming house, practice there before, but they just died right before the qualifier. So like, I spent all my time trying to find a sponsor, trying to find housing for the thing, figuring out rent, and like, I have some knowledge of that because I rented a place over back in Michigan, but like, I didn't know anything about like, you know, getting a house for like five people and things like that, or getting sponsors or anything like that, right? But we went into that tournament fully expecting that we were going to win. And I don't think I'll ever forget it, but our first game, I believe it was versus Marn. I want to say that was one of the most tragic base races I've experienced in my life. It was very depressing. I remember a lot of that game to this day. I believe it was Lee Sin middle. I think Nian Tanso was playing Lee Sin middle and I was playing a Mumu. And I remember he landed a Q on Anivia at like level two, took it into turret and died for first blood. And I don't think I'll forget that. I look back on that now and find it really funny, but we lost that game and that tilted us for the rest of the tournament. Like, I don't think our team was ever more tilted than we were then. But I moved to mid lane and then we picked up, who do we pick up as a jungler at the time? His name was Trix. I don't know if anyone actually knows that guy. I think he went by Fortnite Trix.
Yeah.
Some people might know him. He was the guy
where, I think at one point in time, didn't he like initially trial with like CLG at some point in time? Like, they maybe,
I think so, yeah. Something, right? Yeah, I think over
he never made it beyond that, I don't think.
No. So we were playing with that guy for a while. We played in a lot of qualifiers. This was after I switched to mid lane. And like, the results went really well actually this time around. And I remember us doing really well. And then, what was it? The jungler disappeared. In my mind, I don't remember him telling me anything, but I remember playing PUBG with him recently, and he told me that he told me he had to go for like a week or two.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't actually recall that, but in my mind, I thought he just disappeared from the face of the earth, because like, we had like a qualifier for some MLG tournament over in like Texas again, maybe like Dallas or something like that. Yeah. I don't really remember, where we brought in Meteos for that tournament, because we had to find a new jungler for the qualifier. I remember we picked up Meteos for a scrim or something, and we're losing the scrim really badly, and he's playing Nocturne or something. He used his ultimate, killed like three people at Baron, stole Baron, and won the game on the qualifier for us. So at that point, I was like, okay, you're on our team, bro. If you can clutch like that, you're in, dude. So we picked him up. We went to that tournament. I'm pretty sure we crushed everybody there. Like, our last game there, we meant to like not lock in like Sejuani or something like that, and like Lemon was the one picking, but he actually picked a different champion. So not only did we pick the wrong jungle champion, he also just trolled himself. You can ask him about it. It's actually really funny. Okay. And it was very sneaky, actually. That's who we were playing in the end of that tournament, and we just destroyed his team. I think he was on Pulse at the time, and yeah, ever since then, it just went really well for us. After we did the switch, we rebranded as a team, and things just went well for us for there.
There's two different types for me. Like, there's the person who trash talks like the opponent, you know, that's one thing, you know, that happens certainly. And then there's the people who have problems within teams they're in themselves, you know, like them and teammates don't get along. And I saw that like towards the end of your Hon time, some of your ex-teammates actually were like pretty brutal about some of the things they said. Like, some of them were literally like, I would never be in a room with him, even if I was paid to be again, you know, like even if they were like, you know, fantastic player, yeah, great guy, like, but it sounded pretty harsh. So the question I had in that sense was, if I had to guess as an outsider, if we look at your career and how you came into the Hon scene a bit later, and then how you had to come into Dota 2 later on than some people, and you've had to battle all your way, you seem to fit into the stereotype of the kind of person where, since you're like trying to become the best yourself and you're very demanding, sometimes maybe you like demand too much of others, or at least more than they think's reasonable. Is that, am I being too generous there? What's your take?
No, I think that's all right. That's an all right kind of assumption to make. I do expect a lot of people, but I don't think I've ever really expected so much of someone that they weren't able to do it. I think I like to think I'm pretty fair about my expectations.
Do you think with some of those teammates, I mean, they were mainly like the Swedish ones I noticed. Do you think there was like a culture clash that they just couldn't handle someone who's like in their face in that sense?
Not so much, because I've had issues with other people, you know, that aren't like, you know, European or Swedish or whatever. Like, I've always just had a very strong personality. I'm not like, I'm kind of the person who doesn't beat around the bush. I kind of just like say it how it is, maybe a little like yourself. And I just always, valued winning over everything else, and maybe I wasn't the best kind of, my interpersonal skills weren't totally developed, or maybe they still aren't today.
What was so tough about all these Chinese teams back then? Because obviously the scene has really shifted back over the years, you know.
Yeah, it kind of seems like China is almost kind of behind us. You know, we saw Wings at TI6 look a step above everyone else, but the rest of the teams weren't really there for the most part. And now we see the Chinese team struggling even more. You know, we kind of see Newbie and potentially Wings kind of still up there a little bit. But when you think about like OG and EG and even like DC and VP to some extent, now you just think that those Western teams are just kind of better than the Eastern teams. I'm not sure what exactly changed. I think a big impact was the kind of like the introduction of all the streaming websites where the players take the games less, or take like their practice regimen way less seriously, which was what the Chinese were known for back in the day. It was like those, like, you know, 2 BO5s a day and 10 hours of gaming and strategizing and practicing and watching replays. And I think they kind of moved a lot of their focus to streaming and entertaining their fans because of these like ridiculously overinflated kind of streaming salaries they were getting from these websites.
For many years of my career in esports, it really was just me. I did it all. I was the one person driving myself forwards. I didn't have people around me to help me. But actually, one thing I've learned over the years is the value of a support network. And mine is, of course, the Skrilluminati, my Patreon community. So this video, like many on my channel, was made possible by Ahmed Haju, Frisky, Matt Pugnaccio Rakula, Animosity, BotPounder420, Jensen Gore, Tobias Bernasconi, Tosh, Tuka, and as always, you know it, a special thanks goes out to Jerky's Minion. Would you like to suggest a topic or a guest for my content? Do you want to ask a question for my regular AMA? Do you want to find out teasers? Who are the guests for the upcoming interviews? I often do. Maybe you want to be part of those long discussions where we can talk about whatever you want in esports. Well, if any of those tickle your fancy, put your money where your mouth is and join the Skrilluminati today. Support my content via the Patreon link in the description box below.